Morning, counsel. Are both counsel ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
Now, as for the appellant, I understand, are you going to split the argument? Is that the plan?
No, I'm going to argue this
argument. All right, okay, very well. Please proceed.
Both of these cases were dismissed by the court below for failure to exhaust administrative remedies. Exhaustion of administrative remedies is not a defense in this case. As your amicus, the Pacific Legal Foundation, puts it in its brief, exhaustion of administrative remedies plays no part in federal regulatory takings analysis. The cases relied upon by Judge Cardoza for the proposition that the plaintiffs in the Leone case were required to exhaust their administrative remedies are all state court cases. None of them involves regulatory takings. None of them involves a constitutional claim or a civil rights claim under Section 1983.
Does it matter whether the 1983 claim is filed in federal or state court as far as exhaustion?
Absolutely not. The same standard applies in either forum, Your Honor. Now, the basic point, as the U.S. Supreme Court held in Williamson County, is that the federal standard of ripeness in takings cases does not require plaintiff to exhaust administrative remedies. It simply requires finality. What do we mean by finality? Well, Williamson County was a case where the plaintiffs could have applied for a variance that would have mitigated the effect of the zoning regulation at issue. And the plaintiff failed to apply for a variance. And so what the United States Supreme Court said in that case was, first, the court observed that there is no requirement that a plaintiff exhaust administrative remedies before bringing the Section 1983 claim. And the court goes on to explain that the question whether administrative remedies must be exhausted is conceptually distinct from the question whether an administrative action must be final before it is judicially reviewable, and goes on to say that the finality requirement is concerned with whether the initial decision maker has arrived at a definitive position on that issue that inflicts an actual concrete injury.
Now, in this case, is there any vehicle for your clients to obtain permission to build on their property other than an amendment to the county plan?
There is no such vehicle in this case.
Counsel, the county seems to be arguing that the plan amendment itself is the equivalent of a variance.
That is clearly wrong, and in fact, that is precisely the vice of this particular regulatory scheme. As the U.S. Supreme Court has observed in many cases, zoning codes typically allow for variances to be granted in hardship cases, and that's the standard in Maui County under the comprehensive zoning code there. In this case, there is no such procedure available to the landowner who suffers a hardship, as our clients do, due to the application of the plan. The plan is inflexible. It cannot be changed except by legislative act, an act first that goes through the Planning Commission, then through the County Council, and then is approved by the mayor. To come back to the question of Williamson County, again, the finality requirement is concerned with whether the initial decision maker has arrived at a definitive position on the issue that inflicts an actual concrete injury. Who is the initial decision maker? Clearly, it is the planning director. In the county's briefs, the county says, what we need to show, is that there has been a final decision by the final decision maker. That's not the standard. That's exhaustion of administrative remedies. What Williamson County says, there has to be a decision by the initial decision maker. He has to have arrived at a definitive position. And in this particular case, in both cases, what's happened is the planning director has refused to process SMA assessment applications.
Well, what about the argument that you have the ability to appeal the planning director's decision to the commission?
I would submit that under Williamson County, under the federal ripeness standard, it doesn't matter, because the federal ripeness standard requires a decision only by the initial decision maker. And you don't need to reach the question of whether we have a right to appeal. I don't believe that we do, or whether such an appeal would be futile.
Can you, even if we went with that, can you address for us the argument that that the amendment procedure now allows an appeal from the decision of the director?
Certainly. As the rules were amended in 1997, they were amended to create certain changes to Part 3 of the rules. Specifically, new enforcement authority was added on the part of the planning director to levy fines and penalties for failure to abide by the rules. Subsection 26 says the director's decision may be appealed to the planning commission.
Is there anything like a legislative history that tells us that 204.26 applies only to the preceding subsection?
Not that I've been able to find.
Okay, because it's pretty broadly worded.
Well, I would submit that if it were broadly worded, it would say any decision by the planning director under these rules may be appealed to the planning commission. To me, the words of the director's decision refers to the decision that we've just been talking about in the preceding paragraph. And moreover, the fact that the rules specifically allow appeals in other cases, that is, a refusal to grant an SMA minor, an SMA emergency permit, the fact that the rules have specific provisions allowing for appeals in those cases, to me suggests strongly that an appeal of a refusal to process an SMA assessment application is not permitted. Moreover,
in answer to Judge Leonard's question, yes. There is no legislative history. You're making structural arguments based upon the way that the rule itself is set up, because the provision itself is not limited in that fashion.
That's correct. Our view is it's simply a matter of a plain reading of the rules.
Okay, so you looked to see if there were any notes or something akin to a legislative history, and you didn't find it.
Well, there was public testimony with respect to amendment of the rules. Whether there is something in the public testimony that addresses that specific problem, okay. Your Honor, unfortunately, something I can't answer for you one way or the other, because I'm not the one who did the search.
But your position is that, assuming the appeal went to the Planning Commission, they would be, as a matter of law, required to come up with the same decision that the director did, because the request for building is inconsistent with the community plan.
Exactly. Under the Maui County Code, all administrative agencies are required to follow, to adhere their administrative actions to the general plan. The community plans are incorporated by reference into the general plan. So the same result would obtain. Imagine an appellant coming before you without having put any points of error in his brief. You would ask him, what points of error do you urge that the court below committed? We don't contend that there was any error by the court below. We don't contend that the planning director did anything contrary to the rules by refusing to process these SMA assessment applications.
So the crux of your argument, if I can boil it down, is because the only way in which, under the existing law, your clients could build on their property would be an amendment to the community plan.
Yes.
The ripeness issue turns on whether the amendment to that plan would be considered an administrative act versus a legislative act.
That's exactly our point, Your Honor.
All right. Now, the case that they cite on that is the Ninth Circuit case in, I think it's Kahumanu.
Yes.
How do you distinguish that case?
It involved a planned use development application, which is clearly distinguishable. It's not a legislative act. Occasionally, the county councils do things that are administrative in nature. We will concede that. For example, here in Honolulu, the city and county of Honolulu has the responsibility, it's the authority under the Coastal Zone Management Act, and it ultimately has the authority to issue SMAs or not. The system is different on the neighbor islands. But there are the factors that one looks to in order to determine whether an act is legislative in character or administrative whether it's something that is of general application. In this case, the application that has been pending in front of the Maui County Planning Commission for the last 4 years, while the commission has studied it to death, calls for the amendment of the plan to change the designation of the 11 Palauea Beach front lots. The other question is whether it is something that requires council approval, and we've gone through the process under the Maui County Charter and Code for plan amendments, and it's clearly legislative in nature. It requires first review by the Planning Commission, it requires public input, it requires approval by the council, and ultimately requires the signature of the mayor. That is clearly a legislative process.
Is there any standards, assuming it gets to the county council, Is there any standards that would require the council to approve or disapprove of an amendment request?
And that's the other point. It is entirely discretionary with the council. And everything we've seen from the council so far has indicated that their intent is to save Palawaya Beach. We certainly have nothing in the record that indicates that the council has any intention of changing the plan. Even if we were able to get through the Planning Commission, which has stalled the director's application for the last 4 years.
Would you address the, I guess it was the Sweeney and Lambert lots and what happened there?
Certainly. Again, here, I think the court needs to keep in mind the procedural posture under which this case comes before you. The Leone case is here on an order dismissing after a 12B6 motion was converted to a motion for summary judgment. The Larson cases are here on 12B6 motion. All the county's factual allegations, particularly in the Larson brief, that are not supported by a statement in the complaint itself, the allegations of which must be taken as true, should be stricken, should be utterly disregarded. Okay, the question you've asked is, what about Mr. Lambert and Mr. Sweeney? The short answer is that Mayor Apana recognized that you can't do this to people. You can't take their property without payment of just compensation. And his administration issued an opinion letter, specifically Corporation Council issued an opinion letter directed to the chair of the county council on June 29th, 1999, when the county council asked, what is the effect of the requirement that the administrative agencies conform to the general plan with respect to Palawaya? And in short, what the Corporation Council said is, if you do this, if you refuse to allow people to build single-family homes at Palawaya on their land, you will be faced, the county will be faced with an inverse condemnation claim for a regulatory taking because these landowners don't have the ability to make any economically beneficial use of the property. In reliance on that letter and a subsequent letter confirming that, the planning director under the Apana administration agreed to process SMA assessment applications, and building permits were issued to Mr. Lambert and Mr. Sweeney on the last day of the Apana administration. Mr. Lambert and Mr. Sweeney very quickly spent money in reliance on those approvals, and a zoning by estoppel was created. So that when the Arakawa administration came in early 2003 and purported to revoke those SMA exemptions and revoke the building permits, that action was nullified. That is a particular set of facts that was dictated basically by the fact that the Apana administration elected to disregard the rules. I don't think it's fair or appropriate to expect these landowners to wait forever for an administration to come into office that will do the next thing.
Now, under this amendment procedure, if a homeowner makes a request to the director mm-hmm. or the Planning Commission to propose an amendment, does the Planning Commission, are there deadlines in which the Planning Commission has to say yes or no, or do they have to recommend it at some point, or what's the? I understand that once it gets recommended to the County Council, there are deadlines built in for acceptance or rejection.
But the commission is not required to act on it. To the best of my knowledge, and I'm sure Ms. Johnson will correct me if I'm wrong, to the best of my knowledge, they're not required to act on it with any particular stated time frame. When the SMA assessment application is submitted to the planning director, he's required to act within 30 days. Incidentally, the county asserts that the Larson SMA assessment applications were incomplete. That's not true. The Larson's SMA assessment applications were complete. They conformed to the rules. And they were as complete as the Leone's assessment applications. The Larson's rejection letters also state that the director refuses to process the application under Rule 12F5 because the proposed action is inconsistent with the community plan. To return now to your question about Lambert and Sweeney, if you refer to paragraphs 47 and 48 of the decision and order in the Lambert and Sweeney case, it's Leone, page 404, Larson, page 144. The opinion letters were also known in the development community and understood to mean the department would continue to recognize exemptions for single-family residences. And that's why, until Mayor Apana left office at the end of 2002, everyone believed that you could build homes on these lots. And when Mr. Leone and Mr. Larson bought their property, they did so with the understanding and the expectation that they would have the right to build homes there.
All right, that brings us to this question. Well, one of the questions that I had is, one of the reliefs you're asking for is for us to grant partial summary judgment on the liability on the takings claim.
Yes.
But in this case, your clients purchased the property when the community plan, which limited their property to park designation, was already in effect. So I guess maybe my question is more theoretical, is that if someone buys property that already has no economically viable use because of existing land use restrictions, can that person file a takings claim because their property that they purchased has no economically viable
Absolutely.
Use?
Absolutely. And that's what the Palazzolo case says, that an inverse condemnation claim, unlike the usual condemnation claim, passes with title to the land. Specifically, the United States Supreme Court held in Palazzolo that a purchaser who knows of the confiscatory regulation still has the right to damages. Quoting from the U.S. Supreme Court, the state may not by this means secure a windfall for itself, and a rule that purchasers with notice have no compensation right when a claim becomes ripe is too blunt an instrument to accord with the duty to compensate for what is taken. Goes on to say that the state may not put so potent a Hobbesian stick into the Lockean bundle. But that's the role of Palazzolo.
And is who gets the remuneration, the purchaser or the former owner? Is that an open question, or does it all fall to the
That question is definitively answered by Palazzolo. That is, if Mr. Leone were to sell his lot tomorrow, he would no longer be in front of you. His successor might be in front of you seeking to substitute in as the appellant. He would have the right to recover the damages. And that's so for a number of reasons. It's so because, as this case illustrates, there are often significant questions as to when a regulatory takings claim ripens. And it's so also because under circumstances where you have, let's say, a landowner who is very old at the time when the confiscatory regulation is passed versus a landowner who is very young, why should the older landowner suffer because it takes 10 or 20 years for a case like this to wind its way through the courts and for ultimately the right of compensation to ripen. So that's the law. But in fact, had we been given an opportunity to develop our case, we would have proved, as Lambert and Sweeney did, that when the Larsons and the Leonis bought their property, they believed in good faith they could build. They didn't buy these lands because they wanted a lawsuit. They bought these lands because they believed in good faith they could build.
But, counsel, since this came up to us on a 12B6 motion, wouldn't the remedy be to send it back down for you to file your own motion?
That's a fair point. With respect to the Larson, sorry to interrupt you, but that's a fair point. With respect to the Larson case, in the Leone case, you have a fully developed, a fairly developed record that establishes that the Leonis have no economically viable use of their land.
That
part is not
contested.
Regardless
of that record, didn't the court dismiss it for lack of subject matter jurisdiction?
Yes, that's true.
And so we really don't have a summary judgment before us. We have a dismissal for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, right?
What you have is a 12B6 motion that the court initially converted to a Rule 56 motion and ultimately granted on the basis of lack of subject matter jurisdiction. So I would submit to you that you do have the power to do that under the circumstances of this case. You do have the power in the Leone case to remand with instructions to issue a partial summary judgment on liability only as to counts 1 and 2, the temporary and permanent state and federal takings claims.
But isn't the only issue whether the claim was premature, not whether or not there was a taking?
The primary argument advanced by the county in support of its motion for summary judgment was whether the claim was premature. In response to that, there were actually two rounds of briefing. In the first and second rounds of briefing, we raised the issues with respect to whether the Leonis had any economically viable use of their land. That evidence was not rebutted by the county.
And that was not addressed, right, by the court?
It was not addressed because the county, the court concluded, as you pointed out, that it lacks subject matter jurisdiction. Okay. I'd like to come back for a moment to the issue of factual futility. That is, whether as a matter of fact it would be futile for the plaintiffs in these cases to pursue administrative remedies. We've cited to you a number of statements by the Maui County Planning Commissioners. The Maui County Planning Commission has had before it an application by the planning director for the last 4 years that it's basically studied to death and continues to study to death. Under Howard versus San Diego, the more recent California case that we had cited in our supplement, the issue of factual futility ultimately is one that should go to the jury. If the court reaches that issue, and I think that the issue of legal futility is one that the court can rule on as a matter of law, as we've discussed. But ultimately, under Howard versus San Diego, we believe the reasonable trier of fact could determine that it would be futile for the Larsons and Leonis to pursue a request for a plan amendment before the commission. I see that I have only a few minutes left. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
First question that was asked, Mary Blaine Johnson will be Deputy Corporation Counsel. Good morning.
Good morning.
Chief Judge Jacques Murrow, Judge Leonard, and Judge Fogel. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to have an oral argument. The first question that was asked, Mr. Beeman, is whether there was any way for the Leonis or the Larsons to be able to build on their property without obtaining an amendment to the community plan. He said no. I have brought a, he's offered to help me show it since you don't have a bulletin board. This is in the record. This is a map of the Palauea Beach lots. The lots that are involved, there are 11 lots. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. The ones, there are 9 lots that are designated on the Kihemakinama Community Plan as being for park use. It was designated in the 1998 Kihemakinama Community Plan because it was the wish of the people of Maui to acquire this for a beach. There was a resolution passed, let's buy them all. They got designated park in anticipation of that. By 1999, then Mayor Linda Lingle decided that there was simply not money sufficient to buy all of these lots, and a subsequent resolution was passed to acquire 2 of the lots. Okay, and these are marked county. Of the remaining 7 lots, all still designated for park use, the Sweeneys, the Lamberts, and Warmenhoven all have built single-family residences without changing or getting an amendment to the Kihemakina Community Plan. And how did they do that? Well, they did that by going to the Maui Planning Commission and getting the Maui Planning Commission to overturn initial decisions by the planning director that they had to get the community plan changed. So to say that you can't, that the Leonis and the Larsons have no way other than to get a community plan amendment is simply false. Because
but weren't those decisions contrary to law? In a way, because as the rule reads, they cannot grant the request or they can't process the assessment unless the plan is consistent with the community plan.
Okay.
And are you arguing that the park building a residential house on the property is consistent with the designation of the parcel as park?
No, single family dwelling on a park designated parcel is inconsistent, but there is a way. And let me explain just briefly, back up a little background. HRS 205A is the Coastal Zone Management Act, State of Hawaii. Under that act, counties are directed to manage the properties falling within the coastal zone area called the special management area. They are required to designate an authority for all purposes of the Coastal Zone Management Act. And under the Maui County Charter, Section 8.8-8.4, the Maui Planning Commission is that authority that's been designated. The Maui Planning Commission at one point gave the authority to make the final decision to the Director of Planning. And that was the case when the Guthrie case rose, that at that point in time, the planning director was the final authority. No right to appeal in the rules of the SMA management rules for the Maui Planning Commission was there a right for an appeal. In 1997, they amended the rules and said, no, we're going to take back the responsibility, and we're now going to be the final authority on issues arising under the Coastal Zone Management Act. Their rules are Chapter 12-202, Special Management Area Rules. And under the rules, the director is given the initial responsibility of receiving an SMA assessment application and looking at that application and considering 12 factors of possible impacts on the environment, that whatever the proposed project is, whether it will have an adverse impact. After reviewing that, the director can come to the conclusion that there is no adverse impact. And in the face of this case of a single family dwelling, specifically under the Hawaii Revised Statutes, a single family dwelling is deemed not to be a development. The requirement of consistency in the HRS 205A states that if you're a development, you must have consistency. The chapter does not say anything is silent if you're not a development, what happens. But what if that happens, if there's a determination made by the director that you, first, you're not a development because you're a single family residence, and you've discussed each of the aspects of the project that you're presenting for review, and there's a determination there's no adverse impact, then you can be exempt, and you don't have to comply with any of the SMA requirements, and consistency is not required. Okay, so there is a process. Now, what happened in this case was that the Leonis and the Larsons, well, it started when they bought their property in 2000. They began down the track, and we know in Leone, because there was a great deal of discovery done in Leone, that they hired a planning company, Munikiu and Haraga, who are a respected planning group, to help assist them in getting their property to the point they can build on it, which included doing preparation to make an application for amendment to the community plan. The Larsons also retained the same firm, but I don't know, there's nothing in the record about what they did. We do know in 2004, for some reason, the Leonis abandoned proceeding on an amendment to the community plan.
All right, but going back to your first point, the director declined to process the application because the proposed action is not consistent with the county general plan, and you agree that the community plan is part of the general plan.
Oh yes, Guthrie makes sense.
And that is one of the requirements in terms of the director's determination. One of the sections that cannot be processed because the proposed action is not consistent with the county general plan, community plan, and zoning.
Okay.
So under the existing rules, isn't the planning director's decision correct?
Maybe not. And the reason not is whether his interpretation of what's required under 12-202-12, which is the assessment section, which includes is one of just one of the issues to be looked at, consistency. And so it, whether or not it's the proposed project is consistent with the community plan becomes only one of 12 factors that the director uses in determining whether there should be an exemption or not. In the case of both the Leonis and the Larsons, in the SMA applications that they submitted, they stated, it was prepared by Munakiyo and Haraga, and I still don't know why they did this. The statement was made that this proposed project is not inconsistent with the state plan or community plan.
What was the county's position on that?
I'm sorry?
What was the county's position on consistency? Did the county have a position?
Director Hunt in the two letters said that you have to have consistency to proceed. That was his decision. The Leonis and Larsons didn't address in their assessment application that aspect. They said, no, it's consistent. So they never put anything forward. In fact, they misrepresented that there was a consistency. The solution, this first thing that needed to be done was for an appeal to be taken from those two letters to the Maui Planning Commission. They provided for a right of appeal, and they just didn't go.
But in council, in a 1983 claim, there's no exhaustion of remedies requirement, right?
Well, that's correct, but this is before you get to the issue of whether there's been a taking, you have to have the court has to have jurisdiction to decide whether there's a taking. And if there's no exhaustion of administrative remedies, the court can't take jurisdiction of that to even decide it, the question.
That's expressly not required in a 1983
okay.
claim, right? Like in Guthrie, there was no 1983 claim.
No, Guthrie didn't concern a 1983. But the exhaustion, the Williamson County case holds that in a condemnation case, you've got to get a final decision from the final decision maker. And that is both, and it distinguishes between the exhaustion of administrative remedies and what Mr. Beeman talked about, initial decision by initial decision maker. There is separate exhaustion of administrative remedies. Clearly, let me read to you. In rendering his decision to dismiss the complaint for lack of the finding that the circuit court lacked jurisdiction to hear the claim, in his order, Judge Cardoza said, the rationale underlying the rightness doctrine and the traditional reluctance of courts to apply injunctive and declaratory remedies to administrative determinations is to prevent courts through avoidance of premature adjudication from entangling themselves in abstract disagreements over administrative policies and also to protect the agencies from judicial interference until administrative decision has been formalized and its effect felt in a concrete way. The effect of what they did by not going to the Planning Commission, where we know some people had gotten relief from the issue of the consistency, they have bypassed an opportunity to have their case adjudicated without ever going into the courts.
All right, but your analysis would mean that we would have to hold that both the director and the commission can approve applications that are inconsistent with the county general plan. Because otherwise going to them would be futile because you're not disputing that the park designation is inconsistent with the plans to build a residence on the property.
They can. If there's a determination.
So you're saying that we would have to rule that the director and the commission can approve projects that are inconsistent with the county general plan.
No, I think what's before you is simply whether the lower court said jurisdiction to hear anything. When there's an administrative remedy available, that can give the relief. What going to the court does is not only ask the court to interfere, it denies the administrative process the ability to address the problem and provide a remedy.
But if as a matter of law they're required to issue decisions that are consistent with the plan, then wouldn't it be legally futile to appeal if it's as a matter of law it is inconsistent with the plan?
Mr. Beeman said it was a matter of law. I didn't. There is an option that they can find that the project is exempt and thereby consistency doesn't make any difference. And eventually that's what happened in Lambert and Sweeney. And actually in the Warmenhoven case, the director made that determination because if it's not a development under the Hawaii's revised statutes, if it's a single family dwelling, it is exempt. It's exempt from all conditions, go ahead. And from that point on, there is no control over it. The other thing that bypassing the administrative remedy that could have very easily resolved this is that it requires the court to use its resources to come in. And essentially, the complaint that was filed was asking the court to make the determinations that the Planning Commission should have made. And it embroils the court unnecessarily, and that's why
you're essentially arguing they should exhaust their administrative remedies. That's what you're arguing. You're not arguing rightness, and to me, that's the issue.
Well, as Williamson County says, rightness, exhaustion of administrative remedies is an element of rightness. Rightness is a more general term. And so I'm saying just if you look only at the issue of exhaustion of administrative remedies, which clearly was not done, and I'm going to just a minute address the reasons why they didn't do it and show that the reasons without merit, you never even have to get into, they might never even have to address an amendment to the community plan and go that route. So the whole argument, which is arguments focused on community plan amendment, they don't have to do it, it's a matter of law, is doubly unripe. Because had they gone to the commission in the first place, gotten the commission to say, well, commission could have said, we don't agree with Director Hunt. We're the final authority, we don't agree, we're gonna give, they would, the whole issue of whether you have to amend the community plan would never have come up. So the administrative remedy provided a complete remedy to the situation that wouldn't get into the other issue. And, you know, again, what they're asking in their complaint is for the court to determine a question of law about the community plan. It's not an issue that the court should be involved in it at all in this point in time. I've pointed out that in my brief, some of the language from the Lambert and Sweeney proceedings. And I did this because they have made their arguments for why they didn't have to go to the Maui Planning Commission. First, they argued that, according to Gatry, that the director was the final decision maker. Well, when Gatry arose, the director was. But in the meantime, as Mr. Beeman pointed out, the rules were amended. He no longer was the final authority, the Planning Commission was. Second, they argue that commissioners are so biased that we couldn't possibly get success. Now, even if the plaintiffs and their attorneys had 100% accuracy in predicting the future, there is no law cited for the thing that if you decide that how it's going to come out, then you don't have to do it. You still have to go through, even if it should come out that way. And the third reason is they've shown, the commission has shown that they can recognize an exemption that avoids having to amend the community plan. And the holdings or the findings in Lambert and Sweeney don't have precedence like a legal case would. But they do suggest strongly that they have recognized that there are situations where a community plan is not necessary, where you can build, where the issue of consistency is a factor to be considered, but is not determinative of it, and that you look at the whole pattern. So had they gone to the Maui Planning Commission, they would have either, the commission would have said, yeah, we think that the director maybe misapplied the inconsistency requirement, that's possible. And like Lambert and Sweeney, we're gonna say, hey, you get to go, even though there's an inconsistency, you get to go forward and build your project that you
proposed. But the argument you're making now is not the argument that you focused on in your brief, correct? Your brief's argument is that the amendment, the ability to amend the community plan through vote of the council was in effect a variance or an administrative act. Not that the consistency with the general plan was not a requirement.
Okay. I don't think the argument about the amendment of the community plan is, I think it should not even be considered until they go back and go through the Planning Commission. I made my argument, yes, I shifted. This is the first case I got handed when I joined the Department of Corporation Counsel, when I didn't even know what SMA stood for. So I've now had 3 years to focus on this and become very familiar with the case and with the statute. The fact is that they had gone through the appeal process. They could have had a different result that would never have implicated the community plan amendment. They've continued to argue that it's a legislative act, and they're not required to do it. They cited cases for that proposition. The Howard case that they called to the attention of the court after our briefing process, standing for the proposition that you don't have to change the law. Before that appeals court was the lower court decision denying the property owner's motion to amend their complaint to bring the County of San Diego back into the claim. Originally, the county had been dismissed out on the basis that they had not exhausted their administrative remedies and it was premature. They then, I guess the county was dismissed out of the suit. They then went and took some other actions that they believed fulfilled the requirement to exhaust administrative remedies, then moved to bring the county back in. So the issue there was totally procedural on whether the lower court had erred in denying that motion. And the court found it did. The comments about whether or not they have to change the law says, if it's found that they have exhausted administrative remedies and this is all that's left, then the judge says, I'm holding that they don't have to amend the law. So it really, in some ways, actually cuts against their argument because the court said
that. On the amendment of the plan,
right.
There's no law that requires no standards that would require the council to approve an amendment, correct? And wouldn't that make it a legislative as opposed to an administrative act?
Yes, but my argument.
Normally, if it's an administrative act, there's some statute or regulation that the agency looks at criteria in making a decision.
Okay.
Whereas if it's an amendment to the county plan, I didn't see anything that said the council must approve an amendment if.
Okay. My discussion focused on the proposition, just making a blanket statement, that if your change is made by a vote by a legislative body, it's legislation. And what I tried to point out in citing to the Kahumanu case, which is a case arising in Maui, is that there the plaintiff had applied for a conditional use permit, which had to be done by vote of the council, done by ordinance. And in the council turned down the permit. The case was appealed. An issue came up as to whether the county council was acting in their legislative capacity and had absolute immunity for their acts.
But in Kahumanu, the court specifically found that there were standards that the council was required to apply in deciding on the conditional use permit. So my question is there an analogous standard that the council would have to apply in its decision on an amendment for the county plan?
I'm not sure what standards they would apply. I know that in Kahumanu, in the Sandy Beach case, the court looked at, this is a amendment that only affects one parcel, not the whole island. This is why I argued to say you could look at, this is like a variance, like an exception, and does it fall into the discussion in the Lucas case or the Palazzolo case. The record contains, in the Leone case, a number of ordinances where community plan amendments were granted by the county council. They go through a process. They first goes to the Planning Commission for recommendation. Whatever the Planning Commission recommends, it then goes on to the council. They hold public hearings, and then they make their decision. And I guess I don't know that there are any particular standards that they have to apply to, so it's possible. But as I'm saying, you never get to the community plan amendment if you have followed the remedies that's available to you at the administrative level. The question just doesn't come up. And they argue that the appeal rules don't provide for an appeal of this matter. I think the Lambert and Sweeney interpreted their rules. They interpreted their rules. They're asking the court to interpret the Planning Commission's rules. The Planning Commission already interpreted their rules, and they can do it again. They might come out differently this time, but at least you've got to try. And that's what we're saying, is that all of this could have been resolved. The Larsons and the Leonis could be sitting side by side with their neighbors, with their
Council,
lands still apart.
If we were to rule, or if we were to hold that the claim was not premature, could we address whether or not there was a taking?
That's an interesting question. So you're asking if you found that, in fact, they...
If we held that the lower court erred in dismissing this complaint for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, and we held that the claim was not premature, could we address, as counsel for appellant asked us to address, whether or not there was a taking?
I think you could. I'm not sure that you could come down with a decision. I think what you've got to need to do is, if you decide that the court did have jurisdiction, you've got to send it back to the court for
without addressing whether or not there was a taking.
Yeah. I suppose you could do like the courts continuously do, which is give dictas how they would go, like was done in the Howard case. There's one other thing I wanted to point out, because Mr. Beeman has made several references to this. In 2006, anticipating that there would continue to be problems with this discrepancy in the community plan designation, and the fact that everybody in the zoning was hotel apartment for four of the lots, and I think residential for others. The planning department did initiate an apartment-driven community plan amendment, and has slowly processed it. In the beginning, the Leonis and the Larsons contributed money towards that effort. For some reason, they stopped doing that. I did ask for an update. We're still going on, despite that it's slow, but we're still going on. And I've asked the planner to update me. The commission initially asked for a narrative history and archaeological inventory to be done, and an assessment done as to acquiring the property, which we went back to the commission, and they said, no, we'll delete that because there's no money to buy the lots anyway. I'm advised that the narrative history that the commission asked for was completed in August, that the archaeological inventory survey is planned to be provided this month.
Are what you're referring to, is that part of the record?
No, several.
Are you thinking that's part of the record?
Okay, it is part of the, it's part of the record up to the point that we did the Larson briefings.
So, okay. Counsel, is your point that if the amendment was made, their claim would be moot?
They still have got to supply a completed assessment survey if they want an exemption. If they want to go forward and apply for a permit, they are going to need the community plan amendment. But if there's been an amendment, I would advise them to seek the exemption, because then the county's out of your life, then you don't have to worry about it. In short, I think that it's very clear that the reasons given why they didn't have to, the appellants have given why they didn't have to exhaust their administrative remedy, almost frivolous. that clearly a path was open to him, and it would have taken another 30 or 60 days to get a ruling and then properly have been before the court with their complaint. So I would ask that court uphold the judgments and the orders that were in both the cases. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Beeman, I know your time is short, so there's one thing I want to make sure you address in whatever order you want, which is the county's argument that the administrative remedy would have provided a complete remedy under 12202F1. Basically the commission could have said, no, it was wrong, this is exempt from the requirements.
And that's simply incorrect, because again, under the Maui County Code, all agencies are required to conform to the general plan, and because under Rule F5, an SMA assessment application may not be processed if the proposed use is inconsistent with the plan. Let me address that in a little bit more detail, because there was a statement made that the Leonis and the Larsons could build their homes because single-family dwellings are exempt under the Coastal Zone Management Act. In order to address that, you need to understand the unique regulatory scheme that Maui County has. Under the Coastal Zone Management Act, Chapter 205A, there is a definition of what is a development. Developments are generally governed by the SMA procedure. A development is defined in 205A22 to mean basically any use, activity, or operation on land or underwater. It is defined very broadly. And then there is a list of exemptions. And one of the exemptions is construction of it says development does not include the following, and one of them is construction of a single-family residence that's not part of a larger development. In every other county, unless the director, the planning director, determines that there is some particular environmental concern related to that home, that's the end of the inquiry. On Maui, the landowner who proposes to build a home has the burden of proving that he is exempt, because there is a catch-all at the end of that paragraph that says, provided that whenever the authority finds that an excluded use, activity, or operation may have a cumulative impact or a significant environmental or ecological effect on a special management area, that use, activity, or operation shall be defined as a development for purposes of this part. So in Maui, the landowner has to come forward and prove that he doesn't fit within that catch-all. And on Maui, the way that the landowner does that under Section 12202-12A of the Planning Commission's rules is that he submits a special management area assessment application. All proposed applications within the special management area shall be subject to an assessment and determination made by the director. Under F5, if it's inconsistent with the plan, as the county has previously acknowledged in its papers, the director simply can't process the application.
But is F1 mutually exclusive from F5? In other words, if they... Can you go under F1 notwithstanding that it wouldn't satisfy F5?
I don't. My view is that under F1, they are mutually exclusive. That is, if the proposed action is inconsistent with the plan, that F5 applies, and that's the interpretation that the county planning director is consistently given to the rules, and we believe that that's also consistent with the provisions of the code requiring agencies to conform to the plans.
But wasn't your client's initial position when it submitted the application that they were exempt?
I unfortunately can't address that. I haven't looked at that specific part of the application. I'm not sure whether that's what they said. It may be that the planner who submitted the application said that in order to get the application over the counter. I don't know. I just haven't looked at it. Okay. Basically there is this regulatory catch-22 that prevents the Larsons and the Leonis from building homes. Judge Nakamura, you had asked the question as to whether there is a specific time limit to act, and we've checked the rule for the Planning Commission to act on a request for amendment to the community plan. We've double-checked, and there is no specific timeframe within which the Planning Commission is required to act on a request to amend a community plan. There is a one-year period, as you pointed out, after submission of a recommended change to the plan to the council within which the council must act. But there is no comparable time frame for processing of the application at the Planning Commission level.
Now, let me ask you the question in the reverse. Assuming the county council is right, that in other words, inconsistency is only a factor to be considered, not a requirement, and therefore the Planning Commission could have overturned the decision of the director. Does that mean that your claim is not right?
Absolutely not. And again, we come back to the question of exhaustion of administrative remedies, which is not the standard here. It's simply not a defense in this case. The cases that the county cites to you with respect to exhaustion of administrative remedies, the standards that you've just heard, judicial deference, lack of interference in agency actions, and so on, those are all state court standards. Under the supremacy clause, state law notions of ripeness or justiciability just don't apply under these in a regulatory takings case. That is, as a matter of federal law, the state has taken Patty Leone's land without paying for it, then as a matter of federal law, the state must pay Patty Leone today for the interest of what it's taken.
So your argument would be that even if the planning director's decision was appealable, that the case would still be right, two conditions, appealable and the county is right that consistency is only a factor, not a requirement. You're saying that the claim would still be right based upon the planning director's decision.
That's correct, because all that Williamson County requires is a final decision by the initial decision maker, and that's the planning director. And the question of whether a refusal to process an SMA assessment application is a final decision is answered definitively by Gatry versus Plain, that says, look, refusing to process an application is effectively the same thing as denying the application. There's no material difference between the two. Moreover, if you look at Palazzolo and Lucas County, Lucas versus South Carolina, Mr. Lucas was not required to submit any application to any administrative agency because the effect of the regulation at issue there was to deprive him of all economically beneficial use of his property. So even if one imposes the finality requirement as it is articulated in Williamson County, this case is ripe under federal ripeness standards. Okay. It may be, as one of the planning commissioners said, that to allow development at Palauea would be to aid and abet the loss of this beautiful place. And that's what's really going on here, is that the County of Maui wants to keep this beautiful place for a public beach park. But as Justice Holmes wrote in Pennsylvania Coal Company versus Mahon, we are in danger of forgetting that a strong public desire to improve the public condition is not enough to warrant achieving the desire by a shorter cut than the constitutional way of paying for the change. The record before you shows that the County of Maui deliberately took these three lots for a public beach park without payment of just compensation in violation of the constitutional rights of Mr. and Mrs. Larson and Mr. and Mrs. Leone. Today, the county seeks to postpone the ultimate day of reckoning when it will have to pay for the land it took. Make no mistake, the county knows full well that the day of reckoning will arrive. Corporation Council advised the county council of that in 1999. The planning director has had an application before the Planning Commission for 4 years seeking a change in the plan in order to solve the problem. But the county has no intention of solving the problem. Thank you.
We'll take the case under advisement.